Thank you for joining me for today's weekly update. I have a number of different items to cover, and I'm pleased to be joined by Secretary Jose Romero of the Department of Health, along with Director A.J. Gary, who's had his hands full lately with tornadoes. And then we have also Colonel Rob Ader here, who's done a magnificent job handling our vaccination distributions. And I believe that covered it. And Dennis Smith here with our senior advisors for healthcare at Department of Human Services has joined us as well. And so first, let me talk about the tornadoes. Yesterday, we completed the damage estimates for the tornado and the storm damage in Northeast Arkansas, which is Craighead, Poinsett, Jackson, Woodruff, and Mississippi counties. We submitted this to FEMA for review to the president, and the president has assured me that they will promptly look at this. I'm comfortable to say that I believe we have met the federal threshold for a disaster declaration. We have submitted information over 375 homes were damaged or destroyed. We've had over $3 million simply in temporary housing losses. And if we can qualify for federal assistance, this will mean individual assistance that will help the homeowners as well as public assistance. And so we've submitted that, and I want to thank publicly our federal delegation, Senator Bozeman, Senator Cotton, Congressman Westerman, Congressman Hill, Congressman Womack, and I left one out, for their support of this. And they've sent a letter to the president asking for a quick confirmation of this, and we're very grateful for their support. Hopefully we'll have an answer by this, by Christmas, on this, and if not, I'll be on the phone, hopefully, and pushing them. The second item I want to announce today is that we have had our home waiver request pending at CMS for some time under review. Dennis Smith is here, who's been working very diligently along with Secretary Cindy Gillespie on this. And I'm pleased to announce that CMS today has granted our waiver request to continue with our Medicaid expansion program in Arkansas, which will be now called Our Home. And this will allow 300,000 low-income Arkansans to continue to receive health care under our qualified health insurance plans that have been very successful in Arkansas in expanding health care. So I'm very pleased with this information. As just to refresh you, it includes our Life 360 homes. It includes increased accountability. It includes a change in the retroactivity for what is eligible to be covered. And it has been approved in terms of everything, but the Life 360 will take a little bit more time in order to get the financing in order for that. So that will not be able to start immediately, but the waiver has been approved. And very importantly, was important to me and to the legislature was increased accountability, concentrate on health outcomes. All of that will be a part of the renewal package we have received now from CMS. And I want to thank Senator Irvin and Representative Gray for their sponsorship of the authorization to pursue that waiver. This comes at just the right time so that 300,000 Arkansans can be confident of continued health care coverage as we go into the new year. So it's good news for this time of the year. Now let me speak about the latest case update for COVID, and specifically let me talk about Omicron, the new variant. Last week, Arkansas confirmed its first case of the variant Omicron. Today, the CDC has posted on their website and is saying that Omicron variant is 73% of the new cases nationwide. And then if you drill down into our region, and our region includes Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and New Mexico, that the CDC is saying in that region, the new Omicron cases are even higher than the national caseload, and it is at 92% of new cases being of the variant Omicron. I spoke with the CDC and the White House about this today as to this report's accuracy. The 92% is for the region, I would emphasize, and it is not particularly directed at Arkansas, and it is a projection for the region based upon the latest surveillance data. And so regardless of whether the current estimate is precise, it is clear that Omicron is in our state, it is spreading rapidly, and it will define our prevention efforts for the coming months. The good news is that we are at the beginning of the Omicron variant in Arkansas, and so we should have a good Christmas with adequate hospital space. And we did have a meeting of our winter COVID task force today. I heard from our hospitals across the state. They're comfortable with their hospital space. We went through some of the supply issues with them, but we should have a good Christmas based upon the adequate hospital space that we have. It also gives us a window of opportunity to act before Omicron reaches its peak in Arkansas. And we also know that the vaccines are effective even against this variant. They prevent serious consequences in most cases and vastly reduces hospitalizations. In Arkansas, 62% of residents have received at least one dose, and 51% are fully vaccinated. Only 14%, however, have the booster dose. And that's where we have a lot of work to do to increase the fully vaccinated and those with the booster dose. That means that Omicron has plenty of room among the non-vaccinated and the partially vaccinated to do its work. And for the unvaccinated, hospitalizations will increase. So we want to increase our vaccination, our booster shots, so that come January, we don't run into a hospital shortage, a staffing shortages, and that we are able to make sure that we have adequate coverage for those that are sick because of this. And so with that, let me go to the graphs for today's report. And you see that we have new cases of 955, which is an increase from last week's new case number of 782 1 week ago. You look at our active cases, they're up 253, and we have, sadly, 15 additional Arkansans who have died from COVID. You go to the vaccines, so we had a good day of getting vaccines out of almost 12,000. Of these, 47% are third dose, and so people are getting the booster, almost 6,000 or more. We have 35% first doses that we want to continue to increase because that means more people, we're going to increase our vaccination rate. On hospitalizations, we have are down 17, which is great. As some of the hospital administrators say, people do like to get out of the hospital for Christmas. And so they try to speed that up, but those numbers are down. Ventilators are slightly up. If we go to, this is something that we should draw our attention to. Craighead County is not normally on the excessive new case list, but here we have 116 new cases in Craighead County, largely in the Jonesboro area. And this is a concern and illustrates how quickly the coronavirus can spread. This is an important graph here, and let me go through it with you. The red line at the top are those that are not fully vaccinated. The blue line, the middle one, is those that are fully immunized. And then the green line below, which is the flat line, almost the very, very bottom, it is those that have received the booster dose. And so then you can see, you know, you got your time sequences. It starts November of 2021, goes to December of 2021 on the end. And this is the rate of COVID new cases among persons 65 and older. This is only 65 and older by vaccination status. And so those in that category, if you've been boosterized, if you've received your booster shot, it's just zero cases during that period of time among those 65 and older that are really the most vulnerable. If you've been fully immunized with the blue, you do have some breakthrough cases, fairly minimal. But if you're not fully immunized, you've only received one shot partially, then you can see how the cases have escalated even over the last month. And I think that's reflective of the Omicron variant and how active it is and how it can impact the elderly. So that tells a story as to how important the booster shot is and being fully immunized. I think we covered these active cases. You can see where we are in relation to the peak of 25,000 in August. Week by week, you can see we're holding our own. It's not going down, but we're concerned and believe that likely will go up with the Omicron variant and how quickly it spreads. Again, just a reminder that 85% of the new cases have not been vaccinated. If you look at hospitalizations, you have 87% not fully vaccinated, and the deaths, 85% of our deaths, every statistic that we give, 85% have not been fully vaccinated. I show that because that is the educational tool for everyone who believes in data to say, yes, that makes sense to get the vaccination. And the positivity rate has ticked up a little bit, still under 10, but it's worrisome as to how close that is. And this one I'm going to let Dr. Romero speak to. He wants to elaborate on some of this. So Dr. Romero.
Thank you, Governor. So as the governor has pointed out, we are seeing an increased number of cases in the Craighead County area. And as pointed out, was in the approximately 80% of those cases are coming from Jonesboro. What's also significant is that 54% of those, or 50.4% of those, are in the 25 to 44-year-old age group. So a very significant number, and followed by the childhood age group, those under 18 are 20%. So what this graph is showing you is the total number of individuals within a given age group. So let's look at the farthest to your right, which are the 65 and older age group. You'll see that 75% of those individuals have received full vaccination. And of that group, 52%, a little bit more than that, have received a booster dose. And you can see that decreasing over the age group. It's pointing out that those groups that are below that are not getting their vaccine, their booster dose. And we know, and that the governor has shown that graph here, that has shown that those individuals that have, although two doses fully vaccinated, still are forming part of the group that are being hospitalized. We want that group to get the third dose, that booster dose. Please do so. It's available. Yeah, it's quick, it's easy, and that will give you that extra level of protection. So going forward, please get that done. And you can see that it's particularly low in that 19 to 24-year-old age group. Those individuals are at greater risk for becoming infected with the Omicron variant, and we need to get them vaccinated. So moving aside, I want to talk again about the 5 to 11-year-old group. There's a very slow uptake in the vaccine in that group. At this time, we have about 14% accepting one dose and only 7% accepting a full dose. So again, parents, please, this does infect children. It can cause severe disease. We want these children vaccinated. If you're going to get together for the holidays, again, some rules, some good thoughts to think about. Use a mask. Limit your get-togethers to family members. particularly family members that have been immunized. And if you're going places, get tested before you go. Make sure that you're not bringing not only just your dish to the get-together, but you're not bringing COVID to the get-together by having a test to show that you're negative. So thank you very much, Governor.
Thank you, Dr. Romero. And before I turn over questions, I wanted to recognize Colonel Rob Ader, who's was called over from his responsibilities at Economic Development to come over and run our vaccination distribution program. He's done an extraordinary job, and we're giving him leave with a great deal of gratitude to return to his previous post. And so he'll be transitioning, and Lieutenant Colonel Eric Kramer, who is here on my left, who has been side by side with Colonel Ader through this process, will be taking over that responsibility at the Department of Health, and we're grateful for that as well. But the gratitude of the state goes with you during this critical time in our history and what you've done, Rob. With that, we'll turn it over for any questions.
With Omicron coming, do you foresee reinstating the public health emergency or any type of mitigation measures like a mask mandate or anything like that?
No. And first, in terms of reinstating the emergency, my guideline is as to whether we are managing everything with our existing resources and protocols, or whether any extra action needs to be taken, and we're managing it. So there's no need to redeclare an emergency, even though we take it seriously. Obviously, I'm sounding somewhat of a reminder bell for everyone that Omicron is here and we got to take it seriously. In reference to mandates or stopping businesses, that's absolutely off the table. We're open. It's important for our children to go to school. It's important for our businesses to not be interrupted. They know how we can protect ourselves. They have the ability to make decisions for their health of their workplace. And so we are open. We're not going to be doing what New York's done. We're not going to give people a false choice of either we're going to shut down your business or we're going to be imposing mandates. We not have that choice. We're going to continue to educate, increase our vaccination rate as we're doing, but we're going to keep open.
Are you worried at all with, last I spoke with the health department, Omicron testing gets sent off to a lab a week, and then also with the increase in at-home testing, are you worried that Omicron is much more prevalent than we think right now?
Well, I believe it is much more prevalent based upon the surveillance information of the CDC. Now, I don't believe it's at 92%. I don't think we're where that region is, but it certainly accelerates quickly. And in terms of our capability to identify this, we have two sources for it, which is the Minnesota lab, but also UAMS has that capacity. So we do have it in state. We've invested in that, and so we do have that capability. And Dr. Merrill, did you want to comment further on that?
So the governor is absolutely correct. I mean, this is prevalent now. It's becoming more prevalent in our state. The fact that we found only one doesn't mean that's the only one that is here. In addition to the surveillance that the governor has already mentioned, next month, probably about the 10th of January, we will have our own internal health department surveillance available with sequencing capabilities available. We've been limited somewhat because of supply chain issues, as everybody else. So we are looking for this. We know it's here. We have epidemiologic data to indicate that it's here. I think that these increases in cases that we're seeing, especially in children, represent this Omicron variant.
Dr. Romero, so at-home tests are becoming more prevalent, and early data about Omicron shows that it multiplies faster and you can get, go from negative to positive in a much shorter time period than past variants. That, on top of reliability of home tests, how reliable are tests in general and are at-home tests?
So those are very good questions. So I've directed those questions to the CDC, and I've been informed that as of yesterday, that the tests that are available, those antigen tests, are reliable. They do pick up the virus. And you are very correct that people turn positive, if you will, very quickly with this particular virus. So we also realize that we are losing what we call line of sight, that is the ability to know who is positive in the community. But we also believe that people in the community that test do undergo some form of mitigation measure in their home. That is, they don't go to school, or they don't go to work, they don't engage in social activity. So we do encourage testing at home when possible. These are expensive tests. We hope that they'll be more widely available at a lower cost to the public in the next few weeks.
And let me just add to that, that I do believe we need to expand the availability of rapid tests that you can do in your home. And so I've challenged the Department of Health to develop a plan for that. But there's supply chain issues. The acquisition of sufficient quantity of those at-home tests is a problem. And then, of course, you have the cost issue as well. And so I know that the president will be making an announcement today in reference to home tests and the availability of it. And presumably from the early reports that you'll be able to go online and order from the federal government the at-home tests. Well, that only can occur whenever the federal government commands the entire marketplace of tests. And so that limits the state's ability to develop those type of programs and initiatives and to have adequate supply of those tests. So we'll have to work through that, but that is something that is important that we expand that availability.
Did the feds sign off? You guys wanted to do expanded cost sharing, and I think there's a provision that would allow, if the next administration beyond the Biden administration would allow a work requirement you guys to implement. All right. Something like that. Is that, so did that get approved?
Yeah, let me answer it, then I'm gonna ask Dennis Smith to come and make sure everything's clear on that. But first of all, we ask for a requirement to pay increased premium payment for those that are making more income. And that was denied. And so right now the premium payment is $13 for those on the Arkansas Works, now Our Homes. That will be discontinued after this year because it's disallowed by this administration. The copay is allowed, and so we'll continue to collect a copay, making it very similar to insurance that is on the private sector. And so those two elements there, was a third part of the question? I think that.
Well, my understanding was that there was going to be a part of it that said if there was a change in administration, that they could be allow a work requirement. I didn't know if that was part of the waiver or just.
We would have to go back in to request that specifically. Dennis, do you want to add to that?
Based on the litigation and based on what the Biden administration had put out in guidance, we did not formally request a work requirement that would have to, if it is allowable in the future, as the governor said, then we would have to submit an amendment to the waiver.
Are there any questions remotely?
Hey, Governor, this is Kendall with 4029 News. With the new variant and low vaccination rates in the 5 to 11 age group that Dr. Romero discussed, are you concerned about schools after the holiday break and seeing an increase in cases in youth? And do you anticipate more regulations in schools once they go back?
As they go back to school?
Yes.
Well, first of all, this should be on everyone's mind. I'll have Christmas and I'll have a grandchild there that is under 5, and so they're not eligible to be vaccinated. And so we're taking the measures by assuring that everybody has been vaccinated, all of the adults, everybody who's eligible, and we will also have booster shots that we've taken. And so we're taking the precautions. Everybody just needs to think through that. because of protection of the children, but also the potential for spreading it more broadly. In terms of school, we're going to have a great school year. They've done a great job of mitigation measures and keeping our schools open in a healthy way. And what we just have to do is to continue increase our vaccination rate among the young people, 5 to 11 and 12 to 18, the school-aged children, and encourage them and make it available so they can get vaccinated. We're going to have a very shaky sports season if we don't increase our vaccination rate. And as we've seen in other states and countries, this Omicron variant does have a way of impacting the youth to a greater extent than the previous variants. Dr. Merrill?
Let me also add to what the governor has said. We have test to stay in the state. The program has worked. The CDC says it does. We want to expand that to other schools that aren't offering that. So again, please take advantage of that. Parents should talk to their schools and enroll in that test to stay. We have the supply available to do so, and think that is an excellent way to prevent and to identify those cases in the school so that we don't have spread.
Next question.
Governor, this is David with the Arkansas Nonprofit News Network. Regarding the Fed's decision to allow premiums for one more year and then disallow them going forward, you sort of explained the dynamic there. I guess, do you have any reaction to that or comment about that decision? Was that a disappointment? And then I guess the other thing is, you mentioned kind of increased accountability. And I guess if you could speak a little more to what you mean by that, is that a reference to kind of doing the tracking of the performance of the private health plans or what?
Yes, it is exactly as you expressed it. Let me elaborate. The high one priority was simply getting the waiver so that we can continue this very successful program in terms of expanding health care. Secondly, we wanted to have the Life 360 so we could address maternal care. We could address mental health issues with our community hospitals and expand that care in Arkansas. That was very, very important to us, and we're assured that that's going to happen. We just have to get the financing part of it worked out, and so we're anxious for that, but that's a very important part of it. And then we wanted to have a responsibility part of this for the beneficiary, for the person who is on this program. And we have that because we'll have the co-share that is very typical in insurance arrangements. That will be a part of it. That will reflect the accountability, even though there will not be a separate premium cost for the higher portions, higher income levels. And then in terms of the what I referenced to the accountability, this is all about our insurance carriers and being responsible not just for providing insurance, but for engaging in better health outcomes. And so we want to hold them accountable. We want to improve the health outcomes and measure that. And so that is a part of it. That's been approved, and that will go forward.
If I could, just two other quick ones. On the Life 360 homes, that's sort of, I guess, TBD, the feds are going to continue to work that out with you. You mentioned financing. Is the issue there the match rates? Is that what still needs to be worked out? And then the other thing I wanted to ask about is, in terms of the waiver request that y'all made, what you described included both sort of incentives that the QHPs would offer to beneficiaries if they did certain things, and also said that if beneficiaries were completely inactive, like weren't using their healthcare plan at all, they would be moved to traditional Medicaid. Are those two elements also TBD, or are they all systems go?
TBD is to be decided. I know that part. Dennis, I'm going to let you address that.
The issue on the financing is not about the match rate. We would receive this same 90% match rate from the federal government. The issue is on how to cost out the Life 360 homes. How many will they be, and how do they get counted in the per member per month cost towards budget neutrality? We've had great discussions with CMS. We just couldn't push it all the way through by the end of the year. So we do expect this, our talks with them to continue very quickly. They are very much interested in the concept and in the target populations that we have laid out. So we are confident that we will get the Life 360 homes. It just takes a little bit more time on the financing.
And in terms of the—
Governor, a question from the Democrat Gazette.
Yeah, let's go to the Democrat Gazette.
Thank you, Governor. Ryan Tarinelli here with the Democrat Gazette. This summer, the state ran out of ICU beds and the hospital system was overwhelmed during the Delta surge. Many of the epidemiologists that we talked to say it's simply only a matter of time this winter before the state's hospital system is overrun due to the Omicron variant. What makes you so confident that the state can handle this Omicron surge? And why isn't your rhetoric on the Omicron variant more urgent?
Well, I thought I expressed it rather clearly today with a level of urgency. In terms of the hospitalizations, there's a lot that's unknown. You see in other states, you know, they do have staffing issues. They've had increased hospitalizations just because of the volume of cases. Here in Arkansas, no one can be 100% confident of what's going to happen in January and February. But I know that right now we have about 500 hospitalizations. A year ago, we had over 1,000 hospitalizations as a result of COVID. And so we're at about the 50% level. And also we're about 10,000, I think, fewer active cases. And so we're in a much better position than we were last year when you properly recite that we were really stretched to the limit. We're going to be, and that's the reason we had my COVID task force meeting today, is to prepare for the future and to start the steps necessary in the event we have to expand. We want to be ready. And so we've managed our way through this and we'll do it in the future. So everybody get vaccinated and that'll help us.
And how frustrating is it that the more conservative, hardline elements of your party continue to share vaccine misinformation and even vaccine conspiracies?
You know, I actually think that's diminished somewhat. I mean, I noted that President Trump had his booster shot and he encouraged his audience saying, hey, this is important. I do think, you know, there's still a hardcore element and I think it got politicized early on. And I'm hopeful over time that that diminishes. I think it has diminished. And part of it is just simply people see facts and it's hard to deny the reality of what we're seeing in terms of the new variant, of the success of the vaccinations, in terms of a better health outcome. So that's the right strategy. And I'm pleased that there's a growing consensus that this is the way out of this. Is there another last question at the table here?
Do you think there are steps that you'll need to take to increase hospital capacity once, you know, Omicron really gets going? And what types of, if so, what types of things are you looking at?
Well, the risk is that we are in the bottom 10 of states in terms of our vaccination rate. And so the national prognosticators say that's a problem because that means 49% of our population is not fully vaccinated. And that's a lot of room for Omicron to work. And if a percent of those are hospitalized and we don't increase that vaccination rate, it could mean in January or February we could have a hospital capacity issue. Now, that's unknown, and so we have to be prepared for that. We will be prepared for it in the event we have to expand hospital space. We expanded hospital space last winter. in the, at the peak times, and we'll be prepared to do it again if we have to. We don't want to do that because it costs a lot of money. But if we have to, we will. But the better answer is, let's get vaccinated. Dr. Romero, you good?
I'm very good.
And yes, ma'am.
Yes. Do you have the totals for the damage, cost of damage from the tornado? I know that the benchmark was $5 million. Did it surpass that?
I'm comfortable that that damage level has been passed. The letter to the president for our request for disaster declaration recites the damages in homes, in businesses, in relocation expenses, and some of the cost elements there. But from that, you can extrapolate that I'm confident that it meets the disaster requirements, and it's over $5 million.
On after we receive, if we receive that federal money, can, I know there was a separate emergency state fund, would those be used as well?
AJ, I want to get it right. I think the answer is yes, but is that right, Jay? Do you want to elaborate?
So I think the best way to answer that with the individual assistance, those homeowners, if we get this declaration, the homeowners will work directly with the FEMA teams so that they can verify those damages and get that money into the homeowners' hands very quickly. So there shouldn't be any need to add anything on to that after they receive that from the federal, from FEMA.
And then Dr. Romero had one final word.
So the governor has acknowledged the fact that Colonel Lader will be leaving the health department to go back to his previous detail. But I also want to state that the colonel has done an incredible job in developing and affecting our ability to give out the vaccine. He's left a model that will go well into the future, not just for COVID vaccines, but for other vaccines in its distribution. And I think his contributions aren't acknowledged enough, but clearly when this is looked back upon, it will be seen that he's had a major impact on our ability to distribute vaccine throughout the state. So I want the citizens of the state to know that. I personally acknowledge it like the governor does also.
With that, thank you very much, and some of our subject matter experts and great leaders will be here if there's any additional questions. Thank you.